6:06, we'll call the meeting of the Derby Charter Commission, Revision Commission, 2020 to order at 6:06. If we can all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible,
liberty and justice for all.
Mark, can you do roll call, please?
Yes, please. Ralph Capiello?
Here.
Robert Hyder?
Here.
Camille Brandy Curtica?
Hold on. She's here. She's muted.
Yeah, hold on.
Here. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Chris LaRoche? Okay, Nello Di Malerba III.
He's going to be a little late, but he'll be here later.
Carl McCluster.
Here.
Gina McKay is going to be absent. She's excused for tonight. Sam Palastro Jr.
Here.
James Smay.
Here.
Charles M. Stinky III.
Present.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the record should reflect that there's a quorum present.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? Second time, is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? And third call, is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? Okay, hearing none, can I have a motion to close the public portion?
Chuck Stanky, so moved.
Chuck Stanky. Motion, second by Sam Palastro. All in favor? Our discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Okay.
The record should reflect, Mr. Chair, that Mr. Malerba is now in the meeting.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Has everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes from our June 23rd meeting? If so, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from June 23rd, 2020?
I'll make a motion.
Motion by Ms. Curtica.
Second.
Second by, I'm sorry, who was that?
Ralph Capiello.
Thank you, Ralph. Second by Ralph Capiello. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we'll move on to number 6, the review of the committee findings, discussion of possible action. So there were several subcommittees. The majority of those subcommittees were committees of one. So we were to do some research on our specific topics and report back this evening. So the first one was assigned to me. It was the full-time mayor as well as four-year terms. The full-time mayor is going to change the salary structure of the mayor and increase his salary. The charter currently doesn't mention that the Derby mayor is a part-time position. However, his salary does say that, reflects that of a part-time mayor. If we were to move forward, obviously we are going to have to increase his salary to represent a full-time position, and I'm not sure that this is the time to do that as far as the economic climate in our city and with the tax increases that we've seen recently. If anyone feels differently, please let me know. All right, so
I feel differently. I think that, you know, this is the time to invest. If we wait until, you know, things are better, then things will get better more slowly, and that we're more likely to have a prolonged downslide in Derby. I just think that you know, one of the things that you know, all of us have benefited from was the stability that the federal government provided during PPP and tax and all that other kind of stuff. That was because they saw that not to stabilize and not to put things in position would allow the country to slide down. And I believe that not taking steps to continue to move forward will lose momentum and cause us to fall behind other municipalities in all that. We need strong leadership even more going forward. We need folks to be looking at Derby and ask the question, you know, are they looking forward? Or are they waiting for the lights to come on to make a move? That's my opinion.
Well, I don't disagree with you. You make valid points. My concern is if we're going to this is going to have to be a separate item. Should we move forward to 4-year terms? So we can't necessarily put a full-time mayor and 4-year terms in the same question. So we would have to separate those into two questions because undoubtedly, you know, we have a better shot at getting one or the other or both if they were separated rather than put together in one question. So does anyone else have any views?
Well, if I may, so, and I apologize for being late, everyone. A very busy day for me at work. Someone had to deliver all these Amazon packages. But I think we need to at least maybe address it, and so we can kind of like put an end to it. And in regards to maybe we should say if it's not full-time, then we should say it's going to be part-time, because it's on my understanding now that the charter doesn't say anything about it. And correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. Absolutely right.
And maybe we can kind of, you know, maybe in this way we can kind of put an end to the argument, really, because this is, as you all know, I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time now. Is it full-time? Is it part-time? It comes up in a lot of elections. It's, I mean, as you know, most of you know, I mean, we see it all. We'll see it in 2 years from now, or a year from now, we're on election time. Mayor, is the mayor full-time? Is he not full-time? Or her, is she full-time? I think maybe we should at least consider addressing it.
Okay, and I probably should have prefaced this at the meeting, before the meeting started. We were charged with 35 bullet points to begin with. I think we, at our last meeting, we narrowed it down by 7. So we still have a significant amount of items to go through in order to get this forwarded to the Board of Aldermen and Alderwomen for consideration for the ballot. So I believe, including this meeting, we have 3 meetings before it has to get to submitted to the Board of Aldermen for approval for the ballot. We need to know if this is one of the items that we want to put forward. So if someone wants to make that in form of a motion, so we can start the process of either moving forward or eliminating an item.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Also, just the record should reflect that Mr. LaRocque is in the meeting now.
Okay, great.
Hello, Chris. To the chair's statement, so moved.
Okay, so I have a motion on the table for Mr. McCluster to move forward with making the position of mayor a full-time position. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. LaRocque. Any discussion?
I just want to state again, you know, it's like my favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. And you know, when Mr. Potter was trying to buy up all the shares, Jimmy Stewart said, you know, can't you see what's happening? You know, fear was prevailing, you know, hesitating and not taking care of what they had. And I don't want us to be in a position that we operate out of fear, but we operate out of the fact. If we believe that having a full-time mayor is something that will help this city, then we need to have a full-time mayor, because the help that that will provide will begin to provide it as soon as we can move it forward. That's why I'm such a proponent, you know, for a full-time mayor. I see cities that are thriving, cities that are doing well in Connecticut, you know, and ask the question, how many of them have a full-time mayor and how many have a part-time mayor? There are so many big decisions that have to be made in Derby in order for us not to be caught in the same cycle we've been in of we're gonna. And I've seen the work of this mayor, and I speak from the standpoint of an independent, you know, and having watched mayors before in this city and in others. And I see the fact that if the mayor was able to be working full time, then we'd be at least 33 or 40% further ahead than we are on some of the issues, some of the development things that need to be done. We need somebody in the seat and available. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Rob, I just want to clarify. I see we're talking about, is it just the mayor? Because the last meeting we talked about as well as all elected officials.
Well, that's going to be separate. The mayor we're talking about being a full-time position and all of the elected officials is going to be a separate item in reference to two-year terms versus four-year terms.
Okay.
Okay, is anyone else?
Wait, just comment on the whole thing? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, we're in the discussion phase now. We have a motion and a second, so we're discussing before we vote.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Oney.
I'm sorry, Chris. Are we just putting it on for full time, or are we asking like two questions just for a little clarification? Are we asking it be full time or part time? Are we just going for full time? Just so I'm kind of clear on that.
Well, Mr. McCluster's motion was to move to make it the mayor a full time position.
Thank you.
And Rob, you're saying that if we wanted to bump the salary, if we wanted to do that, that would be a separate question?
No, that wouldn't be left to this commission to decide his salary. But, you know, the mayor's salary as of now, and again, it doesn't say in the charter, it doesn't specify that it's a part-time position.
Correct.
Although his salary does indicate that it's should we move to make it a full-time position, then that's going to have to be discussed by likely, I don't know, I'm assuming the Board of Aldermen, if somebody can correct me, Mr. Marino.
Yeah, the Board of Aldermen.
Would decide the salary of the mayor, should it be full-time. So that's something that we have to...
Just so everybody's clear, the state constitution says that you cannot, the Board of Aldermen cannot grant whoever is sitting in the position at the time a raise, an elected official. It has to go to the next term. So it's not, you're never really talking about who's in the position at the moment. It's whoever would be elected at the next election.
Okay.
Can I ask a point of clarification on that, Mark?
Yep.
What would happen if, let's say, we had a mayor currently and we passed this in February and the same mayor wins again? Would they be allowed to... You know, would that count? Like, would that be the same thing? Because you're actually giving the same person raise.
Well, it could be the same. It's whoever wins. So let's just say, for the sake of hypothetically, you put it on and it passes in November. Well, yeah. That wouldn't really take effect until after the next election. The Board of Aldermen have to say approve a raise. And then that raise would not be effective till whoever is elected in that next election. It could be the incumbent or it could be somebody new, but you can't give it to the person, whoever it is at any time, whoever is in office at that time. It has to go till after the next election.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, just in terms of general discussion on the topic, I don't know how we can get the economic development and this sort of stuff that we need. And in all honesty, to get someone who has the, you know, that can bring a set of skills. I know we have, along with economic development and people we hire, but just to have that level of skill set and the things we need, the skills it takes to be a mayor today, it has to be paid and considered full time, so it can be paid in the correct, you know, manner in which we need to get the job done.
You know, in reflecting on what Carl said, we may get a larger pool of candidates now that should it pass to be a full-time mayor, and you know, people with more experience and ideas that wouldn't necessarily look to seek office because it was a part-time position or a part-time salary. So yeah, it makes
Agreed.
Sense.
The final thing I'll say is that, you know, the people that the mayor deals with, the professionals that come into this city and want to do things, these are full-time people. These are people that spend their whole day, every day, working on these issues. And even even those folks that are in positions. Like, we brought the commissioner of banking down to meet the mayor because there was a conversation about getting a branch in Derby again, and that person is a full-time position. The people that are making decisions are people that are full-time and can put their full focus, energy, and effort into making those decisions. And we never want the person that's representing us to be less well-prepared. Fortunately, in that particular meeting, the mayor was very well-prepared for that conversation. But I can just see with the number of things that happen, a person that's not full-time, there's too much at stake to not have a person who's focused completely on that job for me.
Okay. Does anyone else have any items to discuss before we vote? Okay, so the motion on the table is for a full-time mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, so that's the first item that we are putting forward to the Board of Aldermen. So it would be the consideration of a full-time mayor. Okay.
Good.
Okay. The next item that I was looking to research was 4 years versus 2 years. I had difficulty connecting with the Secretary of State's office, and then I was unable to find the information without a username and password with the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. So Mr. Mayhew had assisted with gathering some information for me, which I really appreciated. And it's some significant information in terms of every city, 169 cities in the state of Connecticut that have 4-year terms and 2-year terms, or 3 years as well. So the number of 4-year terms out of 169 cities is 22 cities, which represents 17% of the state. And 2-year terms, there's 105 cities that represent 83%. He actually broke it down a little further by population, which was more representative of the city of Derby. Between the population of 10,000 to 20,000, and the number of, there's a total of 29 cities that have a population of between 10 and 20,000 in the state of Connecticut, and the number of 4-year mayors or selectmen are 4, which represents 14%, and there's 25 cities or towns with mayor or selectmen of 2-year terms, which is 86%. I was also able to find online, you know, which is just a quick Google search. It's sort of outdated. It was a 2006 survey from the National League of Cities, and it reflected that across the United States, the 4-year term is more representative. It's a 45% as opposed to 6% for 3 years, 2% for 35% for 2 years, and 14% for 1 year. So, you know, while the national, at least from 2006, indicates that there's more, a significant more number of 4-year terms than in Connecticut, that's where we stand on that. So this would be a separate and distinct item from full-time mayor. We are looking for 4-year terms, and again, not just the mayor, but all elected officials. And currently, the only elected official in the city of Derby that's 4 years is the town clerk. So if anyone has any questions.
Rob, I just happened to read in, I think it was the Connecticut Post, but I'm not sure, that Trumbull's Charter Revision just had, they brought up the same thing, and they removed it as a question from there. They decided to not address it for various reasons, the 4-year term. They're sticking with 2-year term. So that's just a point of information.
Okay.
That was posted during the week.
Interesting. I didn't see that.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Go ahead, Camille.
Once we have a full-time mayor, are we going to tell them they cannot have an assistant because we're not going to be able to afford that position too? That is something we have to think about.
Well, that would be,
That's an issue for the Board of Aldermen, too, to decide.
Part
of the whole package.
Yeah, that's something we're going to have to think about.
Okay.
So a question related to the term. What's the population of Derby?
It's just shy of 13,000.
Okay.
Sam, do you have that figure?
It's roughly 13,000 to 14,000.
Okay.
So has anyone done a projection of growth for Derby and where we expect it to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
I don't have the exact figure in front of me. However, I know Derby's population has been pretty stagnant for the better part of the past 10, 15 years. If anyone
the population of Derby has been the same since 1950 census.
Okay.
And are we going to be talking about term limits tying into a new term if it's going to be 4 years? I mean, are we going to be talking about limiting the amount of time that somebody can serve?
We can.
Or separately or together?
We can. We can discuss term limits. However, I think it was Mr. Mayhew made a good point by saying the term limits can ultimately be decided by the voters on election day. If we have a mayor in office and he served, let's just say hypothetically that we go with two terms of say 2 years that we land on. So we're limiting him to 4 years and he's in the middle of a project. We're essentially saying that, you know, he can't see that project through. I think that's something that maybe I would rather not do term limits and leave that up to the voters.
So Mr. I think Mayor. Excuse me.
Go ahead, Mr. McCluster, go ahead.
No, I interrupted someone else. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I'll ask it afterwards. Go ahead, Mr. Okay. McCluster.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, the sharing just now about the challenge of a 2-year term or term limits actually accentuates the need for a 4-year term in my mind, because an average development project of any significance is a 3 to 5 year journey. And so what we've experienced in part is that mayors have started something but haven't been able to get it close enough to have the momentum to drive it forward in terms of development in Derby. And so when the mayor has a 2-year term and there's a possibility of turning over, it even suppresses developers. I was on the phone today with someone from the Leon Wiener Foundation. It happens to be a foundation that has, you know, tens of thousands of units of housing in communities around the country. And one of the reasons that they look at different communities is because of the stability of leadership over a period of time. Because when they invest, you know, tens and even hundreds of thousands of dollars in research and in all that it takes to get a project approved, and it takes a year and a half to get a project approved, to have someone then come in that didn't like it because it was the previous mayor's thing, and those things really do happen. I can take you to some of those examples, but won't weigh you down with that. Trust me, it does. That it makes it difficult to have investors come and take the time to develop projects and then see those projects through. They just pass over. They pass over because they are not assured of the stability of the leadership in the town that they're in. And so if we want quality development to happen in Derby and real investment to happen in Derby, we need to have the assurance that there's going to be stability in our government. And we always have the right to put someone out after 4 years if we don't like them, just like we do after 2.
Correct. So
I want to make that case because, you know, I mean, my background in large part is in economic development and around the country, many different cities, you know, large cities, as well as some suburbs and smaller towns. And that experience has led me over the course of the last 20 years to see the value of having a stable, established government in place that invites investors and people who are putting a part of their life into a project to be in that, to come to and to stay in that city. Thank you for listening.
I agree with Mr. McCluster. I think a two-year term really limits the scope of any project that you're going to start. I mean, these things take a lot of time, and if we're changing horses too often, I think his point is very valid, that people are going to look at this and say, well, how do we know that another further year down the road that the administration is going to be the same, will have the same support, and et cetera. So I think that does make sense, because it would limit the scope if you just use a two-year term.
Additionally, when a mayor takes over, we have a new mayor takes over and currently under our two-year system, he's taking over a position, or she is taking over a position with the previous mayor's budget. So by the time that they are working under their own budget, they're already seeking re-election. So rather than concentrating on seeing their first budget process through, they're already looking to campaign for re-election while, you know, just working under their first budget from their first term. So that's another significant issue that we to look towards a four-year term.
And if I can real quick also, I also think if we're extending, well, not extending, I should say, but if we are going to start with four-year terms, specifically with the mayor position, I do think it builds a little stability. And, you know, we were talking before about bringing in, maybe it becomes more clean. I think regardless it's full-time or part-time, if they see that maybe it's 4 years, even not being full-time, I do think it might be a little bit more appealing to someone as well. So, and it builds continuity, which is good.
It's right. Agreed.
And am I missing something? Are we talking about discussing limiting, like they run two terms and they're done if it's a 4 year term?
No, we haven't talked about term limits. We're at this point, we're just talking about 2 year versus 4 year, and not necessarily just for mayor. I mean, that happens to be the example that we keep using. We're talking 4 year terms for all elected officials.
Right. Okay. I got a little confused. I thought we were going the other way.
Yeah. Really, all right. So if somebody wants to make a motion to change our elected official terms to 4 years rather than two, now would be the time.
I'll make the motion.
We have a motion by Mr. McCluster to move elected officials in Derby to 4 year terms.
I'll second that.
I have a second by Mr. Smay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carried. So we will move to a four-year term to the Board of Aldermen for consideration for all elected officials. Okay, the next item, Oney, I'm gonna turn it over to you on the electronic posting.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, I did a little research on this. Some of our posting stuff has already been handled. I knew a little bit about it before. Obviously,
you're breaking up.
Set up. Can you hear me better now? I'm sorry.
Yeah, now we can. Now we have a good connection.
All right. Sorry about that. Yeah. I think there's a couple parts of the charter, I believe, that to be updated specifically, that this isn't, I believe it was the budget posting, and there was something else that escapes mind, but I think, you know, posting it electronically, it's more convenient, it's better for the city, and, you know, there's obviously state statutes that we can go along, and also, we can also word it in a way where we can say electronic, we can post it electronically when applicable, and if there's to say that says you have multiple, then will be it. But I think it's, you know, to say this is kind of one of the low frame
use the term low-hanging fruit. I think this is a perfect opportunity. We can save a little money. It's actually a slam dunk, in my opinion.
Okay.
We just need to kind of clean it up a little bit.
I believe that the two sections, one is in the section that calls for publishing the budget, and the other is for the building assessments and so forth. Those were the only two that were not changed the last time. Everything else mirrors the language of the state statute, and Attorney Marino had echoed that the last meeting. So it probably makes the most sense. And also, too, I would respectfully ask you to consider that not, in addition to following the state statute, that we put something in the affirmative in there that says that all of the things shall, in fact, be posted to our website, so that I'm sure that will be language for the future, but I think for the peace of mind for people here to know that they can be assured that it would, in fact, be on our website.
In addition to what is required to be posted in the newspaper. Right.
I think it's fair to make the assumption that that would be a requirement, because it kind of is in certain instances, but
right.
You know, instead of having to make somebody go try to find it in the statute, which can sometimes be a little bit tedious, at least it'll be a guidance to say, hey, everything will be posted on the website.
Okay.
And I thank you for clearing up that second part for me, Mark. I apologize, I forgot that. But I also think by posting it on the city website, it also helps build a little bit more transparency. I mean, obviously, if you're looking at the city website, but I just think it's, like I said, builds transparency.
I think it's a great idea to put it on the website. However, you're going to eliminate it from being in the newspaper?
No, I believe yes. Some of them, I believe, will be
It wouldn't eliminate it from being in the newspaper. It would just follow the state statute. And most of it, 95% for the city stuff, is already in there to follow the statute. Right now, the statute says it has to be published in a paper that is actually printed. Some people could argue that the Valley Independent Sentinel, which is completely online, has more readership than perhaps some of the papers that are printed. I don't know what the numbers are, but we couldn't, based on the state statute right now, we couldn't put it in the Valley Independent Sentinel, even the way the state statutes read now, because they are not a printed paper. So this the charter is already set up for the most part, except for those two sections. One is just publishing of the budget, which we published the legal notice, and again, it was like almost $1,200 to print that in the newspaper, in the New Haven Register, and it was on our website anyway. So,
and that's required to be published in the Register, Mark?
That was not that particular section, for whatever reason, it was missed the last time.
Okay.
That one thing.
So we're saying that everything still has to be posted in the newspaper, in addition to
Because that's what the statute says right now. But instead of when and if the statute is changed, then we can make that transition.
We'll already be ahead of the game. Okay.
Without it, well, we've already done that, except for that one section with the budget and another section which we've never really we'll have to get that so you can include that in the change. But it's like when there's a change of an assessment on somebody's property or it's kind of an obscure old fashioned language anyway. So it's,
right.
It's,
okay.
It can't be done. But the bulk of it, like for publishing of, like this notice for charter revision or bids or things like that, there are many more publications now that are strictly online. But they don't count. They don't comply with the statute. You have to have a paper. So it's kind of like limited to the papers that are printed. You know, and we don't have a printed paper, even a weekly or anything like that. So we're basically, we're obligated to go to basically the Post or the Register, and they're owned by the same parent company. So it's kind of, language, it would be, it's a little bit odd to think that we were even complying that way, because it's such old language.
Can I ask one quick question, Mr. Chair?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, so is Vin on the line with us?
Who's this?
Vincent, our attorney.
Yeah, Mr. Marino, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, real quick question. You know, we had this conversation in our subcommittee about home rule and all this other kind of stuff. So, I mean, has anyone tested this one? I mean, just seems that, you know, the common logic would want you to test it, that we're going to have to pay all this money when we could set a separate rule for ourselves that is against the statute, you know, based on our previous conversation about some other areas of things, that if we were ever challenged by it, I mean, who's going to challenge us? The newspaper? What's your professional opinion on that, on going against the grain by putting it the way we want to have it and beginning to exercise it now?
Right. When it comes to providing notice, you must conform to the statutory requirements. Otherwise, the notice is ineffective. And if the notice is ineffective, then the action of the body is subject to becoming void because it wasn't properly noticed. The purpose of the notice is to provide transparency and allow the public to participate in the government action, no matter what it is. And depending upon what it is, it's either publication in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act, or it could be, for example, land use bodies have specific timing requirements. But you can't deviate from that.
So somebody that's low income doesn't have a computer, or somebody that's 90 years old doesn't have a computer. Do they have an argument for this?
They do. There is the modern trend is to get away from the computer and to get away from the newspaper and get to the computer, but that the law has not changed yet with respect to that. I believe within the next 10 to 20 years, the legislature will get there, but not at the moment.
Right. Yeah, because my computer over time is cheaper than my subscription to the newspaper.
Well, you know, the example I gave is one of my clients, the town of Orange, got a $7,500 grant for recycling. And by the time they published the notice in the paper and then the notice of the action, the costs consumed all the grant money. Wow. So the publication was just ridiculous, because publishing in the New Haven Register is just very expensive.
So to the chair, I would ask that if it's appropriate for us to recommend that we ask our state legislators to attack this issue at the next session.
Yeah, we certainly could do that. I mean, that would make the most sense. So in the meantime, we would be getting ahead of the game, hoping that they can attack that in the next session and save us some money on postings. So
I'd like to ask a question. Do we have like a public, for lack of a better term, a public bulletin board that we post notices on, so we can say it's going electronic, but for people that don't have electronic access, you can see our public bulletin board at City Hall, the Green, the Riverwalk, I don't know.
Yes, we do have it at City Hall, and that is part of the state statute as well.
There we go.
Okay. Okay, so do we want to make a motion to have all postings be posted to the website in addition to the newspapers per state statutes? And once hopefully we can get the state statutes to conform and not require a printed newspaper. So if I can have a motion.
So moved, Oni.
I have a motion by Oni.
I'll second it, Chuck.
Second by Chuck. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, that's we have three items already that we are forwarding to the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen for review.
Chair, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. So I'd ask that question, but I'd like to, if you feel it's appropriate or necessary for the Charter Revision Committee to formally communicate in writing with our state elected officials that it is our desire that they bring this issue to the floor at the House and at the Senate to try to move it. I know that it's an uphill battle. I know the lobby is against them, but you know, if the only way you certainly fail is by not trying. So I believe other municipalities, other of the smaller towns and cities in the state are under the same pressure that we are. And I can't imagine we can't overcome that.
Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to write that letter and send it off to our representatives in the Valley. To represent our city.
And perhaps, Mr. Chair, you could also ask the Board of Aldermen to consider to ratify that as well. And I'm sure the tax board has a money saving to show that the city is united on that thought.
Good idea. Very good idea. Okay. Thank you for that, Mr. McCluster. So moving on, we are going to go to the Board of Apportionment and Taxation Subcommittee. Of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, Mrs. Kurtica.
Okay. So what I did is I contacted our sister towns. I spoke with someone from Ansonia, and Ansonia said the Aldermen and Alderwomen is a board, and so is the tax board, and it's the Board of Apportionment and Taxation, which consists of some alders and some residents. They are appointed positions with terms expiring between 2 to 3 years. The only elected positions are the aldermen and alderwomen. No tax board, nothing like that. That's Ansonia. Seymour, theirs is a little different. They have a board of finance, which is elected every 4 years. They have two alternates. The Board of Ed budget is voted and approved by the residents. The city budget's approved also by the residents, such as public works, police, and all city services. They are elected every 4 years, but the selectman is only elected every 2 years. And then I ended up speaking today with Shelton, and actually, they are in the process of doing a charter revision also. They also want to do the same thing that we're considering, have the Board of Aldermen manage the finances. What they said is, you know, they used to nominate three from each party, like three Democrats, three Republicans, three Independents. But they said the people weren't always knowledgeable, and they feel that it's stronger to have the committee be selected from the Board of Aldermen, or if the mayor wants to appoint some people, but the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, would be the ones to finally vote and decide on that. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like that's what most of the towns are doing now, Ansonia and then Shelton. Okay.
So is there a recommendation to reduce the number of members on the tax board, or is there a recommendation to increase the number of Board of Aldermen and eliminate the tax board altogether and make it a subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen? I don't know what the pleasure of the commission is to look at.
Well, you could, you know, what you could do is the aldermen, alderwomen can, like we said, make some of the committee be from the Board of Aldermen, and then you could select the other people that you want. If it could be some members of the tax board that you feel are good people for it to be on it, you know, that's what we would have to decide. We want to pick out the strongest. Hopefully be nice and have some experience, financial people, things like that.
Anyone have any questions for Mrs. Kurtica? Is this an item that we want to have a, make a motion? I mean, we have three items so far, bring it to the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen for consideration. I would need a motion. I'm not clear on how you would view that happening in Derby.
Make a motion.
I'm sorry.
You want to make a motion to like you say, the Board of.
So if I'm understanding correctly, what we want to try to do specifically is we're going to take the tax board, and make it a subcommittee basically of the Board of Alders. And then are we going? But what I want to know is, are we planning on expanding, or we're keeping it the same? There's a lot. This is a biggie. This is a major overhaul. So I think we need to be very, very kind of specific and tailored to what we kind of want to do, because this is a major change. This is a major fundamental change.
It is a change, yes. I mean, it would be something that doesn't take place on election day no more. This would be an appointed position, basically.
And I know.
Right, Ross?
Yeah, based on our hearing from the public during the public hearings, I think we heard it from three or four different people that we want to move away from appointed positions and have the voters have more of a say in the elected officials, including the police commission. So I'm not sure that we should be moving away from having our tax board appointed rather than elected. So that's kind of moving away from what the suggestions that we received previously.
Yeah, and what I can certainly say about that is, you know, we see the same sort of setup on the tax board as a sort of counterpoint to that. You know, our tax board tends to look a lot very, very similar year over year. It's, you know, six Republicans and the top four vote getting Democrats in most cases. So, you know, when I read Walt's piece earlier today where he advocated for something like this, and I stopped and I thought about it, and I said, like, yes, we have the tax board that's elected right now, but, you know, we don't see a lot of change in that year over year. So I don't know that, you know, as a function of like accountability and things like that, in terms of, you know, what we have elected positions for, it doesn't seem like it's always that most effective way of doing it, you know, especially like holding folks accountable, as Walt spoke to in his op-ed from earlier today. So I just wanted to sort of throw that out there. Maybe we could chew it over and see, you know, how that fits into it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
It's Bim Marino. The other thing you might consider is if there's a concern about, the general public, is you can create a system like other communities where the budget gets approved by the residents. So you would basically adjourn a referendum, and the residents would either vote up a budget or vote down a budget, but the budget would be proposed through your tax board. This way it gives the residents the ultimate authority on what how much their taxes are going to go up. And, you know, you don't have to then blame one committee or another committee. If the residents vote for the budget, then, you know, their taxes are a consequence of that of that budget. Okay. So, you know, that's something to consider.
I believe so. That's Seymour does something similar to that. Yeah. Now, how would that look? Is there? I've never experienced that. Is that something that there would be multiple lines on the budget to vote for, or
no? For example, in the town of Orange, shall the city of Derby adopt a budget in the amount of $70 million? You know, if they say yes, then the budget gets approved. If they say no, then it comes back to the tax board and they have to propose a new budget.
And then,
I believe
and then the citizens vote on it a second time?
I'm sorry?
and then the citizens would the taxpayers would vote on it.
Then it goes back to referendum.
So you could potentially have 3, 4, even 5 referendums.
1 year, the District of Amity School District had 16.
Wow. Okay.
But ultimately, it's the people that get to vote.
Right, right.
In Seymour, they vote separately for the school budget and the town
thank
budget.
You. That's what I was trying to say. Seymour, they do two separate budgets. Board of Ed is one, and then the rest of the city is another.
Okay. That would make your job a lot easier, Mr. Garfalo.
Oh, yeah, 16 referendums with absentee ballots certainly would.
Yeah, what would the cost of that be?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Probably about $15,000 per referendum.
Okay, so
limit the number of referendum available on any given election.
I believe Seymour does it. They don't do it by a referendum. They do it. They have call a town meeting, and they have a town. If you show up, you vote, and that's it. If that's how it goes. I'm not
right, positive. But if there's enough people that say we want a referendum, then they can vote. The town meeting can vote. I mean, changing to a town meeting format like Orange or Seymour is completely changing the way we govern here. That's a whole different other way because they have a board of selectmen that's elected citywide and a board of finance, that are governed by statute. That's a much different setup than what we're used to here.
Right.
What can we further this? Like, we don't, I know we're going to submit this. We have a couple more meetings. Can we kind of like form this up a little bit more to see, to submit it to the alders? I mean, because this is, you know, like this meeting or the next meeting, because consuming the board of aldermen, the tax board into the board of aldermen itself is a major overhaul. I mean,
it is significant. And, you know, maybe my recommendation might be to table this and to maybe next year when we can get reappointed by the Board of Aldermen and then have more time to discuss this and to look into different options.
I'd just like to bring back to what we started in the first meetings. Remember, we're under a timeline. If we have Rob, correct me if I'm not, we only have like 2 to 3 weeks left and to get correct. It to the Aldermen and something this complex. Again, you know, it can get bogged down. Like Oney said, it needs a little more discussion. That when we started out, that it was going to be just, you know, get a couple because we are empowered for 16 months. So just, you know, this might be something to look at. We can discuss it again future in you know, the next meeting like Oney suggested. But, I mean, we don't have to vote on it tonight. But if you wish to.
Well, I would.
I was going to say, I absolutely agree.
This is really far from low-hanging fruit.
Exactly, yeah. So if I could have a motion to table this, we can keep it on the for consideration in the future.
I'll make the motion.
All right, I got a motion by Mrs. Kurtica to table this for further discussion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Was that Mr. LaRocque?
Yes, it was.
Second by Mr. LaRocque. Any discussion?
I have just one question.
Sure.
Just what was the specific recommendation of the subcommittee? Because in all of our back and forth, I've gotten lost a little bit in what the specific recommendation was, or was there not a specific recommendation and that's why we're going to?
Yeah, there was not a specific recommendation. There were ideas floated about from our neighboring towns, what they consider what they do, but there was, correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Kurtica, was there, did you have a recommendation for tonight? Camille, are you muted?
Camille, are you there?
Camille, are you there?
I'm here.
Was there a specific recommendation? Mr. McCluster's asking if you had a specific recommendation. That we may have missed.
A recommendation from where?
From you for the tax board and the Board of Aldermen. Or is this something that there was no, you, in other words, you didn't have a specific recommendation to move forward with, correct?
Well, we were discussing that, you know, like, yes, it should be some members of the board, you know, the Board of Aldermen and Aldermen, definitely.
No, understood, but there was no specific recommendation to move forward with tonight.
Right.
Okay.
Not really.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can we maybe table this until the next meeting then? And this way we can just, if we have to, maybe if it comes up, if we have a little more info in the next 2 weeks, so be it. If not, we move on and we come back to it after. This way we can
move along. Yeah, we would have to alter the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was a motion already on the table. That's fine. I apologize.
Well, but the motion was to table it till the next meeting.
Right.
No, the motion was to put it into the next cycle.
That's yeah, exactly. We're going to table it until the next cycle was the motion. I mean, if we want to change the motion to table it until the next meeting for further discussion and further review, if Mrs. Kurtica wants to do additional research in the meantime.
I'd just like to, having asked the question and expressed unreadiness, I think that the issue is complex enough. And it's going to be very difficult to get a clear picture in the time frame we're talking about. So I'm in support of the original motion.
Okay.
I'm also in support of the original motion. I don't want to see personally that, you know, have put too much on the plate or even try to get too much on the plate. I'd like to get a couple of basic things done and not overwhelm the general public come November.
Okay, great. All right, so we have the motion and a second, and we had our discussion. So all in favor to table this until the next cycle? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, the next item was, Mr. Stanky, the qualifications for city positions.
Okay, thank you. I reached out to the neighboring valley towns and spoke to them. And I asked on both positions, full-time positions, and I believe that the task was volunteer commissions too also. And I spoke to Ansonia, Seymour, Orange, Oxford. They have populations closest to us. I tried reaching out to Shelton and really didn't get a response. For the full-time positions, all towns had said the same. As Corporation Council had previously said that they leave it because they're full-time paid positions. They leave it up to their town council or Board of Aldermen or whatever to set those qualifications because they're full-time positions. The volunteer commissions, they also said the same thing that we do, that they're appointed and there's no, they don't set qualifications in writing. Because they have, like we discussed previous, that it's hard to get volunteers and to fill all spots. So all those towns do the same thing that Derby does, that they appoint, and some towns go through interviews. The only one that was different was Orange, where the first selectman makes his appointments, and he submits them to the Board of Selectmen, and they have 10 days to either say yay or nay. If they say nay, then they convene a Board of Selectmen meeting where they hash it out there. So pretty much we're in line with what everybody else does, like it says, with the exception of Orange. I spoke to the first selectman in Oxford, also Seymour and Ansonia. So we're pretty much in line with what everybody else does. So if you're looking for a recommendation, what we have on our plate now, I say that, you know, we can discuss this in the future. It's not a, we're in line with everybody else, so we should keep it as it is.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? Any questions for Mr. Stanky? Okay. So, So we'll move past that and leave that be as for now. The next item is the police department. Mr. McCluster, Mr. LaRocque, and who was the third member on that subcommittee?
Mr. Malerba.
Okay, Mr. Malerba. So that you had your subcommittee meeting on Monday. If you'd like to present your ideas from and your results from that meeting, please.
I think that, and I did my best best Mr. Hyder imitation and being for one moment the chair, and found it just as much fun as you did, as you do with all of us. I think that we agreed, and we went into the committee meeting agreeing that there are two different things that we're talking about. One is the unionized workers, and the second is the non-unionized workers. Because the union contract has not come up for another 4 years, then I think that the general consensus is that from the information that's being presented and that's before us, that we should move that portion of it to the next next level, to the next cycle. In other words, the ideas about anything that would be suggested in impacting the contract, we can give more time and consideration to those things, and even have conversations with the union representatives as we go through the time, and we'll have more time to really talk about any recommendations. As far as the police chief and the other two non-unionized positions go, and I think that I made it clear, you know, then in my opinion, certainly everyone's able to speak for themselves, that I really do appreciate Jerry's professionalism, his knowledge of not just his office, but of the task and of the calling of being a law enforcement officer, the way that he conducts himself and the way he's led the force. And I'm actually very relieved that he isn't trying to go anywhere. If there was another office open somewhere, he's always welcome to come down to Bridgeport. We would be glad to have in the next round of competition for the chief in Bridgeport where I work, we'd be glad to have you, Jerry, in that number when that time comes, just for the record. Having said that, the real key sticking point seemed to be the opinion presented by Vinny that property rights might apply for any change that we make for people that are right now in the cycle of in a position to possibly, you know, again, possibly might apply for people that might possibly want to apply for the or receive the chief's position should the chief decide to retire early or move to Aruba and enjoy the rest of his life on the beach or something like that, which he has no intention of doing. I don't know why I would go, Jerry. Because he's going to, but the issue is not whether he chooses to or doesn't choose to, in my mind. And again, I'm going to invite the others to comment afterwards, that the idea of property rights, I'm not comfortable that idea of property rights would survive in a legal challenge, personally, and having talked to a couple other people about that. However, the advice of Vin is that will be an issue if, in fact, we don't agree to allow the person that has been there under the current conditions under which they came into the office to into the police force. You know, the question of, does that mean that someone who's they don't have cadetship, but if you just got hired at the police department, you know, this year, and this is your first year in the police department, do you then have property rights for the expectation that once you progress through, if you get to the point, then you will be able to automatically ascend to the position of chief? I think that's going to be a hard argument to make in any court. Having said all that, you know, the we ended with the idea that, and I put forward the idea that we're not planning for what's going to happen 5 years from now, or 10 years from now even, because our expectation and our hope is that Jerry would continue to be in that position for another 15 years. And that would be a great, as long as he's healthy and willing to serve. But that we're thinking about, there's a scripture that I quoted that said, a wise person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. And so in looking at what we're going to leave for our children, I stated the first time I heard this rule or this this convention that it gave a sense of something that did not allow for open competition for the best person to take that job. And so my recommendation, having not gotten a specific recommendation, we did not poll the committee for one, is that we plan for that future by immediately putting into place rules that apply to anyone who's hired into the police department beginning the moment that we put that in. In other words, people are grandfathered in because they're in the police department now and they're trying to get to that position now and they stay at Derby because they're trying to get to that position. Then those people, having had that expectation, would not be penalized. But coming into the police department at any level from here to four would not have the privilege of that automatic ascension. So I support that idea as a step to take right now, so that we would, one, put things for the union and the union contract and that dealing there into the next round of the charter revision, and for the other piece, that the charter revision include this change to create the open competition for and that people who are a part of the police department now would be eligible to receive that benefit. I would almost have to say though that should then only apply to people who have 5 years of supervisory experience, because that's one of the criteria. So that anyone who does not have 5 years of supervisory experience now would not be grandfathered in, because they have not gotten to the place where that would be a reasonable property right expectation. Thanks for listening. And then for the as far as we talked a little bit about the police commission, but did not come to any germane recommendation there. Other members of the committee, please weigh in now and share.
Yeah, I'll just speak a little bit to it. Yeah, basically everything. I'm going to echo what Carl said, and you know, my just general takeaway from the subcommittee meeting was that you know, though with the exception of having doing something to enlarge the member of the the police commission itself, every other issue with what we would want to see happen with regards to more inclusiveness and that sort of thing would just be handled in a political manner. The Charter Revision Committee could not fix that sort of issue. So that was just my takeaway. And again, thank you to Chief Narowski for his effort and his time and everything. So.
Oni, did you want to add anything?
No, I mean, obviously, just echoing some other stuff. I just worried, you know, we were just talking about the tax board stuff, and I'm not opposed to making changes first and foremost, but I have a concern that this is going to, it's a lot. We're going to be throwing a lot out there, and if we're not going to do the tax board, I have concerns that this is going to bog things down a little bit as we're going forward. And I have concerns. Not that I'm opposed to anything and making any changes, but I just have some legitimate concerns.
And so
because of the time, time restrictions.
So we did it. I think we universally agreed that we were not trying to change anything in this cycle as it relates to the union contract and the unionized employees. The only thing that is recommended as a change is a singular thing, and that's that the automatic ascension be discontinued beyond those people that are now eligible for that ascension because of having had 5 years of supervisory experience that would qualify them if they were to get to that level, that they could then become the chief. And the two people that are now in position said something, Mr. Jerry Lee, for some reason, that they could not become the police. So that's the only change that we're talking about, which is saying that people who have not gotten to the level where they could assume that property right, that there's no longer available to them. But the people that have gotten to that level do still have that right going forward.
I'd like to comment, Mr. Chair, if possible.
Of course.
Okay. I wasn't able to go and be participant in the subcommittee for some reason. I didn't know it was there. But Mr. McClusker, I congratulate you. You ran a very, very efficient meeting for your first time doing it, if you said that was your first time. I did watch the recording of it. Again, the chief came up with some very good points. And he, I don't know if anybody on the committee saw, but he submitted another, some bullet points today. As the chief had said in the subcommittee meeting, that you just can't break things apart because one change will affect seven different things in collective bargaining, will affect things in agreements that they have. So it's a very complex situation. We just can't jump in and change one thing. We need more time to study this stuff. I think to give it our due diligence. We are under the time constraints. We've got a couple weeks to do this. In your subcommittee, you did speak to the chief, and like I said, he did put his points across. His points are, you know, that's management's point of view. I'm not saying he's right or wrong. There were some very good points there. But as the chief, that's his view of the contract. I think we also have to listen to the bargaining unit side of the contract and then come to a happy medium between it. So, again, that goes out. That was management's interpretation. Might be different from collective bargaining. Again, I says we have 2 to 3 weeks to get it to the Board of Aldermen. We are impaneled for 16 months. I think this is a big thing. I think it's great that we're discussing this stuff. And we should discuss it in the future, but I think we should take it as a whole, you know, not just change one thing now in risk of it, you know, being there. The Corporation Council during the subcommittee meeting and also during our meeting last 2 weeks ago suggested that we table this because it is such complex things. And just adding my 2 cents in from working there for 32 years, going to an outside chief. And this is my view of working there. I could see it as being disastrous. Okay. They're homegrown. Again, some chiefs are better than others. I had the opportunity of working with Jerry. We got in there together. I think getting from the inside is the way to go because we can just look what's going on in Shelton and terrible, terrible things are happening there. You know, like I said, the subcommittee did very good work. It's a complex, complex situation that we have here that I don't think we can give our due diligence at this time. It's a great subject to be discussing. We should discuss it. Keep it on the burner. Like I said, we're impaneled for 16 months. Let's get something done that we know can get passed through, and then we can have open dialogue with everything. Again, like I said, we've got to have this stuff all together as a package. So if you want, there's no other discussion.
Well, if I could make a suggestion to everyone, and if you can, Mark, or maybe Vinny, when is the deadline that we have to have everything submitted to the Aldermen?
Mr. Randolph, you can elaborate on that. I believe we need to have it to them by August. So it can get to the Secretary of State's office in order to get on the ballot.
So we have two more.
You have to have it to the Board of Aldermen And if they agree, then you're done. If they don't agree, then they have to send it back to you. So there would be back and forth. And any however long that's going to take, it all has to be wrapped up everything has to be approved by September 3rd.
Okay. And we also we still have to have a second public hearing.
Correct. So everything that you have to do has to be done by then. Okay. And I just want to clarify one thing. I'm going to share the screen because I want to just make sure that
I was just going to ask you, Mark, if you could pull up the 9-point proposal.
Hold on one second, though.
Mark is pulling that up. Oh, sorry. There it is. It's popping up now.
Hold on one second, though. I need to. Can you see that?
Yeah.
What do you see on the screen? Sorry.
Sections 41, 43, and 44.
Yeah, no, sorry, wrong. So this is section 7-190. You see that?
Yep. Yes.
So that's the whole section that was previously distributed. But I direct you to 7-190 subsection C. You see that here? Just for clarification. So once you make your final report, this commission terminates. It's done. Then the board has to reappoint you, which I think they're committed to doing in September or whenever this thing is finished. But just for clarity, once this process is finished, this group is terminated, and then they would have to reappoint you all again.
And we would just have to go through the same process of public hearing.
Correct. Yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of that. So it's right. Sorry about that.
Well, if I may, if that's the case, after seeing that, I just think maybe if we could table for next meeting till we start voting again, officially, or make a clear clarification on when we're going to vote, because I do think we should revisit this tax board thing. I have to be honest. I would ask that we would revisit this tax board and this police issue, because they're big enough to make major changes. And I think, I think a little more research needs to be done, because we do have a little bit of time and we could call a special meeting if need be. Mm-hmm. And I just, I've always been honest with everyone. I just feel like we kind of brush it off a little bit. And there seems to be like a little confusion on one topic. And on this topic, we have a little bit of back and forth as well. And maybe we should just be prepared for next time to make an official vote on those two. And just table those so we can be a little bit, in my opinion, because I think that board of the combination thing is a very large issue. So I hate to revisit it, but I think that's a large issue, and I think it's really more important than we're giving it credit for.
I absolutely think we need to revisit that. However, I still don't think that we're going to have the time. So with the Board of Aldermen's commitment to re-upping this Charter Revision Commission for another 16 months, I think we'd be better served using that time to do more thorough research on how we want to proceed. And again, we already have some major ticket items that we're going to present to the Board of Aldermen and Alderwomen. So that would be yet another. I mean, that's a pretty significant one as well.
Mr. Chair?
So I was going to actually, Chuck's been trying to get in. You know, I just want to take exception to, and it's not a personal exception, it's a professional exception. I'm not on this committee to get what we can get passed through. I'm on this commission taking the time to read and to participate because we have a responsibility as a commission to examine whatever we can examine and to put forward what we believe is best for the city that we all call home. And so the idea that, and there's no guarantee that myself or anyone else will be alive in October after September reappointment. So what we do while we can do because we've been asked to do. And you know, on this particular issue, I'm not at all willing to say punt. I think that the position that is offered is one that takes the reasonable expectation of the ability. You know, why would we try to change the charter above and against a contract that exists that's going to be revisited in 3 years anyway? That would be the item that we would move forward into the next round of conversation so that we could talk to the people that are representing the police officers union and all that kind of stuff and really get a sense of what they think and what we think is good and best for our community. As it relates to the chief's position and ascension to the police chief's position, you know, it is very clear that is not an issue of collective bargaining. The one part about it that is suggested to have an impact upon collective bargaining, which is the property right that's assigned to someone because they have a reasonable expectation of getting a reward if they do certain things by removing or by protecting those people that have that expectation based on where they are, then you've clearly, or we would have clearly, have protected any, believed property rights. And again, I don't necessarily agree that those property rights would survive, but I'm not trying to go to court about it. I'm trying to be reasonable about it. And the idea that we think that this city is gonna be the way that it was, you know, 15, 20, 25, 30, or 40 years ago is probably one of the banes of existence in working on this charter itself. Just like at the federal level, lynching is not a crime, although it was the primary tool of killing Black people publicly. But as of right now, it's still, you know, lynching itself is not a crime. So by, as the federal government moves to try to fix that mess, then I think we need to move to deal with, you said you wanted low-hanging fruit. Here's low-hanging fruit for you. You know, someone is going to be said to automatically go into the position of leadership of what is supposed to be becoming a more diverse police force by nature of our efforts of what is right and good and reflective of our community. But they're gonna be someone that, you know, has been following the old way of doing things as opposed to someone who might have a different perspective. You know, colloquial is not always good. And, you know, in any other business, in any other sport, The idea is to get the best person on the field. Right now, I think we have the best person on the field, and that's Jerry. He's the best person on the field right now. But the next person is not going to be Jerry. He's going to be a different person. And I'm not willing to cede the next 25 years to say that there couldn't be a better person who has had other experiences, like some of our own police officers have had coming into Derby from other places with good experience that made them eligible for appointment by the chief to a higher position than they would have had if they had to start it all over the beginning because they were coming in at the beginning. So I appreciate you listening to my diatribe, but I'm passionate about this because it reflects an attitude that we're saying to our community that because things are good the way they are now, they will always be that way. And I think that's a big mistake. And I think that it's a suppressant to the growth for the development of Derby. And I think it's a suppressant to competition, which should be natural. Public sector doesn't mean there's not competition. Part of the challenge in some of the areas of public service or is that you don't have to work for your job. Once you've got it, you've got it, and you've got it forever. And so as a person who believes in collective bargaining rights, as a person who believes in putting the best person on the field, I plan to die in Derby. That's how long I'll be here. But my children that live in West Hartford and in other cities around the state of Connecticut, I want them to have the best person that's in that's eligible to be in that seat. And there's just too many other resources for us to close this off and say, we won't possibly take someone who hasn't, grown up in the Derby Police Department. I mean, there's no other place in the world that you would say that. So why would we say it here? So thank you for listening. And, again, my request, I don't have a problem in moving the unionized part to the next group, whether I'm a part of it or not. But I take strong objection to not dealing with this low-hanging fruit that presents us with the possibility that we could have a police chief who is much, much less qualified than many other people who would want to come to Derby and to serve in Derby and to move our police department forward with the times in which we live.
It's my understanding, and Chief Narowski, if you can intervene and clarify, it's my understanding that it's not necessarily an automatic succession based on your appointment. There's a vetting process that an outside agency we go through that and then recommends candidates to you, in which you choose, you make a selection from, which then goes to the police commission. Is that's the same for the deputy chief as it is for other managerial positions in your department?
So I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of this. As I had expressed to the committee, the testing for the chief's position occurs in the deputy chief's rank. So what happens is there is an extensive, comprehensive written test, which is thousands of pages of study material, and it takes months to prepare for. Then there is a very competitive oral board with basically a jury of your peers that don't know you from other places in the state. All of this is proctored by a third-party vendor that this entire region contracts with for promotions. That person, the proctor, is a PhD who acquires those materials from professional paid organizations. Once all that moves forward, there's some contractual language that allows for service points for years of service, because that's considered. And then there is a specific objective component to ranking those people and allowing a pick of the top three. It's not the good old boy system. It is a evaluation which needs to withstand legal scrutiny, which involves the mission of the organization, use of sick time, the past history of the person, the rank that they held, the years of supervisor experience. There's, I think the last time we had a promotion, there were 14 or 16 criteria in there. Then that goes to the commission, which is the appointing committee by law, which is the police commission. So I don't appoint anyone, but all that vetting is done at the deputy chief's level. And as I had mentioned to others, the reason you have this and this rule that it has existed for over half a century in the charter is because there were problems with political appointments in the past. A political appointment makes the chief of police position a puppet. And basically, when if the chief doesn't obey the mayor, then he can be removed for cause. There's just cause protection in the state, but there's a reason why this was put in. And to just simply wish it away is something that needs more research, because there's a history behind why things are done and the problems that occurred before that. I don't have the entire background, but somebody put this in there specifically to deal with it. And what I will say is that in larger organizations, you see appointments in outside chiefs, but the majority of organizations of our size are promotions from within, unless there are unqualified applicants. And the problem you have is that we have a ton of qualified applicants. As we had mentioned, 75% plus of our organization has the qualifying degrees to succeed to chief. They have bachelor's or higher. And on top of that, many of them have the supervisor experience. So the system works in doing problem solving and evaluation. The first thing you check is there a problem? And the second thing is, if there's a problem, what is the proper resolution to that? I think trying to knock this out in a 3-week period is difficult. So that's my two cents on this, but there is an extensive vetting process, and I can go into much more detail behind that, but it's done at the deputy chief level and not at the chief level. That's the short answer.
If I may real quick, I'm sorry, Carl. I just have one real quick question. Just out of curiosity, can you tell me how many people actually took, I don't know if you can legally, but actually took the test recently for a deputy chief?
I want to say off the top of my head, see, I can't be very accurate, 7 or 9, somewhere in that range. And that's about, so in order to take the chief's test, well, there is no chief's test, but in order to be promoted to chief, you need to have a minimum of an associate's degree, and you need to have a 5 years of supervisory experience within the organization. Those standards are the years of service or supervisor experience is an industry standard. But the issue that we have is that the degree requirement is well below the industry standard. So it's usually a master's or higher. And you have a bunch of people in the organization who meet that requirement right now. But the testing process to move into the deputy chief slot encompasses everybody with at least 5 years experience. So you're assumed to have the educational requirements before you move into that position. But if you don't, you still have the time in that grade to earn those.
So my statement was going to be that the same process that you've described that goes on here goes on at many other police departments around the country and around the world. We are not unique in terms of a very comprehensive training and testing. And you shared even that this process for selecting people and moving them up in promotion along the way up to the place where they would then seek to become deputy chief is also practiced by other municipalities within the state, many municipalities within the state of Connecticut. So it's not unique to us. This is the process. That's the process everyone goes through. Where our process changes from everybody else's, not from everyone else's, but many, many other processes is that we say that once someone's gotten to that level, then they become immune to competition from others who have gone through similar processes because they didn't go through that process in Derby. And, you know, the simple fact that something is old, 50 years ago, whatever it was, I've heard people quote things like, You know, you can't take, you know, a woman, police officer, you're talking about, you know, horse dung on someone's shoe. These are things that are that have been in there for 50 years. So because it's old doesn't mean that it's right. Because it's old means it needs to be revisited and looked at and see if it's appropriate for where we are right now. And in a world where we have so much access to so many resources, I'm just asking the question, why would someone say, I don't want the best person to do this job. What I want is the best person in Derby to do this job. Because if we do that, then I don't know how many of you own American cars. You would only buy American cars. Not because we support American manufacturing, because many American cars are made overseas. And many foreign car makers make their cars in America. So I think we have to get over ourselves as a community, as a city, to think that we're the only ones that can produce something good. And that because it came from here, that's a singular reason to exclude any competition for a job that is so important and is going to be dealing with a lot of people who are not from here. Not just the people who live in Derby, although the population of Derby remaining stable in terms of its number has changed in its ethnic and its cultural diversity over the last 25 years, very, very, very significantly. The culture of Derby is changing and is going to change more. People who come through Derby, we were talking about stops of cars. Well, the stops of cars in Shelton, I was told, doesn't happen very often. We were sort of laughed about it because they only stopped 308 cars or 18 cars, I think it was, or something like this, in a designated time period where we had stopped, you know, 10, 20 times more because we do stop cars that are doing things wrong in Derby. Well, so that means that people who come to Derby, experience Derby, are going to eat and live and work in Derby, are going to be people that are going to be not the only. It's not just going to be people who live in Derby to do these things. And we deserve better. And if the best person is in Derby, then let the best person win. But don't say that we're going to choose the person from Derby simply because they're from Derby. That is arcane. I have other words for it, but I won't use them on this call because I'm trying to figure out who it is that says they don't want to have a competition for the best person to hold any position in this city. I've ceded the collective bargaining rights because that is appropriate. I believe in collective bargaining. I believe those people should be protected by their rights. You know, in this statement, I've even ceded something I don't necessarily agree with, which is property rights. But to push this off to the next time, it just says that we're scared to make decisions about things that are important and that are going to affect this community for decades to come.
I just have one more quick question, and I apologize for not asking this the other day. And it just when I just asked you that question, I just another question popped up. So like you said, seven. We'll say for argument's sake, eight people, just a ballpark figure, took the test for the deputy chief. Does that mean we have basically eight supervisors? And people in supervisor position?
No. So, okay. so we can't confuse the two. The thing is that the deputy chief's position is open to the entire organization. So promotions to the rank of detective require a minimum of 3 years of service, and promotions to any supervisory position require 5 years of service. So it's open competition. You can have a patrolman come in, have 5 years on the job, and have a PhD. And they may be the fantastic candidate that walks in. They can be a lateral transfer from another organization that has 20 years experience and they can test in. But you cannot succeed the chief unless you have the 5 years experience and you've tested into the deputy chief's position and you have the minimum educational requirements. So that's where you earn the supervisor experience. It's at the top level only. That's the charter version of it. And I just wanted to clarify that we're talking about two positions that are outside the union, the chief and the deputy chief. The one I see and two I see are the members outside of the union, everyone else is a union member. So the outside of the title of detective sergeant slash lieutenant, which is our rank, there is no collective bargaining stuff that you're talking about in the charter. So I don't know where the argument or agreement of collective bargaining versus non-collective bargaining came into this. The charter doesn't supersede collective bargaining. So I just want to kind of clarify that part of it.
Well, it comes into it with the idea that as we parsed this area, we said there are people that are covered under collective bargaining, gotcha, and there are people that are not covered under collective bargaining. The particular issue that is on the table right now is how does one succeed to the level of, or how does one become the chief of police in the city of Derby? And so because the idea was brought up that property rights exist for people who had the reasonable expectation that they might one day be able to ascend to that level, then those all the people except for the two that are in that in the positions right now are under the collective bargaining agreement. So that's why that needs, in my mind, a deeper conversation. But for those that are outside of the collective bargaining agreement, then I think that it's clear. If those people or other people like the 7 or 6 or 5 that are in the collective bargaining agreement that have the qualifications to be chief right now, if they were to have, if they were to pass the test, they would be selected to serve in one of those two positions, then those people are immune from the change that I'm recommending, because they have the right to try to get that job. But the others don't have a right yet because they're not yet qualified for that. And so it does not impact their career path in the same way. I think that my suggestion is trying to be reasonable and respectful for those that have paid their dues and have done the work in Derby and have served faithfully, and therefore are now in a position, should they be selected or to move to the chief's position. But those that haven't gotten there yet, I'm wondering why are we thinking that those are the only people that should be considered when the time comes?
Understood. I was trying to figure out what the union connection was, and to restate hopefully what you're saying is that you're saying that potentially people that have a property right are in two groups, some union, some not, and at some point there's going to be a line drawn in the sand. You can't have a property right thinking about being a Derby police officer and maybe wanting to be chief. I understand how you're trying to separate that.
Thank you.
And one more follow-up, Chief, I apologize. And just to clarify it again, that was, you needed 5 years supervisory or 5 years as an officer to be deputy chief, or I might have misunderstood you there. So just to, if you can clarify that for me.
Five years as an officer in order to take any promotional exam. The charter controls the chief position with requirements.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If we can, I've listened and I think everybody has valid points here. I think not contrary to what Mr. McClusker says, but I think we are not putting it off. I think we're doing the exact opposite by giving due diligence to study this more, and that we should study it to get it done. So with that being said, I'd like to make a motion that the police matters be tabled until a time in the future that we can discuss it.
Point of order, Mr. Chair, in terms of the motion before it goes to second, then we discuss it. And that would be, if you would accept it, is that this commission agreed to consider this issue in two parts. One part was the part with the unionized employees, and the other part was the part with the chief. And so I think that any motion that would address that would have to address it in those two parts.
Well, I'll amend my motion then, that we'll make the first one that I don't agree with that, because everything was presented in the as one part. It wasn't broken down into union and non-union. So, but if that's what pleases the chair, I'll make a motion that first that the automatic secession be tabled until the time that we can discuss it further at great length.
I second the motion.
So I have a motion by Mr. Stanky to table the succession to the chief, second by Mrs. Kurtica. Any further discussion?
Well, I mean, we could, if we need, I know we have time restrictions, but we could have a special meeting if we needed to. I don't know if that's allowed to discuss, like I said, the police and the tax board stuff, if we're this passionate about it. I think it's, we shouldn't just, if that's something that we can do, then maybe we should do our due diligence and have a special meeting just for those, if people feel passionate about it.
Well, the tax board issue has already been voted on. Well, we have a motion in a second, so we're gonna vote on that. I'm of the feeling that this is these are items that need more discussion than we are allotted with time. They're too important, and I'd like to take a vote on the motions on the table.
Unreadiness, Mr. Chair. Unreadiness, sure. Because the motion that's on the chair, I understand it to be that the issue of succession to the chief be tabled until we have more time to discuss it. That's, I believe, how it was stated. And I want clarification on what that means, because it is my opinion as a member of the committee that we have more time to discuss it at the next two meetings. So I want to make sure that more time to discuss it is at the next two meetings, not a de facto movement of that particular item that's been motioned to some other time beyond the purview of this committee.
I understood it as putting it until the next cycle, not necessarily the next meeting. Chuck, did you want to?
That is correct. And we really do not have the time. I've sat on previous charter revision commissions. We have a plate load of stuff here that we put forward. And I know that the workings, and to say that we can discuss this in one meeting, can't. You just can't. And we're coming into the summer, and I know people are here. Listen, I did not, I volunteered to be on this commission, but I didn't volunteer to spend my life on here. I have employment. I have other things that go on. That worked. That, you know, you can special meeting this to death, but you're never going to get everybody here all the time. So, that's how my motion stands.
Well, we have the motion to table it until the next cycle. However, if this motion gets voted down, then clearly it stays on the table. So
that's correct.
So
in the point of discussion of that motion, you know, when we first said that we were going to, you know, if I show you my calendar and my day, then I can argue that there is no one that is more busy than I am. I'm not more busy than anyone else, I would argue, but there's no one more busy than I am. From morning till evening, after this is over, I go to my next one. You know, so when we first said we were going to meet every couple of weeks, I was okay with that because that was what the group wanted to do. But you know, to say that we don't have time because we won't take the time, to say that things go on because we won't address them is like I said, I didn't come on the committee so we could just pass things through. You know, these are real issues in real time with the community in which we live. And if we really care about the community in which we live, we'll take the time. This particular issue that has been motioned is one that is very finite. It is not, the opinions are vary on it by a great deal, but unlike the other part of it, which is the union issue that has 1,000 moving parts, this particular issue only has a couple of moving parts. And I think that there's time enough to discuss it. So I pray that the committee would not abdicate their responsibility to deal with issues under the theme of low-hanging fruit that was introduced not by me but by others into this committee, and said that we were going to do that and go after those things. Now, why run from the issue? Face it. Vote your conscience on the issue. Don't punt it down the road, because the issue is now. Why are we trying to avoid making a decision? If you disagree with the argument that I've made, then I dare you to put it back on the table and let me make that motion and vote against it, if that's what you feel. But don't hide behind moving it, kicking the can down the road on something that is not as complex. This isn't a complex issue. It isn't. It's just a choice of how we choose to conduct our business in this city. Thank you.
Come on, we got to vote.
Okay. Mr. Garfalo, should we take a roll call vote, or?
Seems as though you're going to have a divided vote, so it probably makes sense just to go right to a roll call vote if there's no objection from the committee.
Okay. All right, please.
Okay, so Mr. Stanky, can you just restate the motion so that we're all clear on what it is that's being voted on?
I move that the portion of the automatic succession to Chief be tabled until the next session. Such meaning the next cycle.
The next cycle, okay. And that is in accordance, I just want to confirm, Mr. McCluster, that that's in conformance with what you were saying in terms of splitting the question into this being the non-collective bargaining positions versus the collective bargaining positions.
Yes, if that's, I believe that's what the motion addresses.
Okay. Okay, so the motion, so then somebody wants to vote yes to table it, that would put it off to the next cycle. A no vote would mean that you would want to discuss it in this cycle. Is everybody clear on that?
Yes.
Okay, I'll call the roll. Mr. Capiello.
Yes.
Mr. Heider.
Yes.
Mrs. Kurtica.
Yes.
Mr. LaRoque.
No.
Mr. Malerba.
No.
Mr. McCluster.
No.
Ms. McKay is absent. Mr. Palastro.
Yes.
Mr. Smay.
Yes.
Mr. Stanky.
Yes.
Okay, so we have one, two. Six yes, three no. So the motion carries.
Okay.
Congratulations.
This is certainly something that, Mr. McCluster, that we will take up in the next cycle.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make another motion now for the second half of that we also table the remaining police matters until the next session.
I have a motion by Mr. Stanky to table the rest of the police matters until the next cycle. Do I have a second?
Second that.
Was that Mr. Capiello? Did you second that?
Yes.
Second by Mr. Capiello. Any discussion? I would like to add that one of the items that hasn't been discussed, and that we can just for the record put this on for the next cycle as well, is the removal of supernumeraries as the hiring pool for new police officers. That was brought up by Mr. Sampson. However, it did not make it to the bulleted list, and I want to ensure that it does. In looking over my notes from previous meetings.
Right, but this encompasses all the rest of the police issues.
Correct.
Is that fair to
say? Yes.
That's what the motion is.
Do I want to do another roll call vote?
I think if I were going to guess, you can call it and see if there's if people want a roll call vote, just we can go directly to that.
All right, we'll try all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'd like to register an abstention, please, Mr.
Okay. Heider. And we have Mr. McCluster abstains. Okay, item 7 on the agenda is narrowing the revision proposals for submissions to the Board of Aldermen and Alderwomen. We've made significant steps tonight in doing that. So we are moving forward with the full-time mayor to the Board of Recommendation to the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen. We are also recommending four-year terms for all elected officials. And we are moving to have all postings be posted to the website in addition to the newspapers that are required per state statutes, and that once we get the state statutes updated, that will save significant dollars for the city of Derby. And per Mr. McCluster's recommendation, which is a very good one, was to get our state representatives to push that that agenda forward on the floor in the state capitol. And we'll also get approval and support from the tax board and the Board of Aldermen and Alderwomen before that, and have that ready to go as well before talking to our state representatives and senators. Is there anything, we're not scheduled to meet again until, I want to say, I think it's the 28th.
That's correct.
Check my calendar. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. So between now and then, Mr. Garofalo, are you able to revise that bulleted list of items for revision?
Yes. There's a whole bunch of other items too that are beyond what the committees did. Are you prepared to go forward with that tonight or to deal with it, or are we at the 2-hour point?
Well, no. Which other items are you referring to?
Hold on one second. Let me just. Some of them are. We could look at them and see. Well, I mean, I'm just going, but based on what, there were certain things that you were going to go forward with from last time that. I will have to, we'll comb through the list and see. I think there are some other things that might be like, I'm sorry, here we go. There, you know, this list that we had worked on last time. I think there are probably, those are the major issues, and then we could just look at if there are any other housekeeping matters that need to be revised. We can take a look at those as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I wonder, since we are, one of the main points we're going to be discussing is the term, the mayor's term, and the all the elected officials. Is anybody interested in looking into the term limit issue to see if that's something that we want to attach somehow to the change in the term?
Yeah, we can certainly look at that if that's something that we want to make it in the form of a motion to amend the 4-year term for all elected officials having term limits.
Perhaps what would make sense is we can work with Attorney Marino to kind of develop the language.
Okay.
And then you can have your eyes on it, and with, and maybe obviously if there's no objection to Mr. Smay's point, we could put that in there as a point to be discussed.
Okay.
Then you can at least take that up next time and see it, like what the language would actually be.
Okay.
I was going to ask that if Mark's here and the attorney's there, if he could start get ahead on it and start drafting some draft language for us so we can see exactly what it looked like. Is that,
yeah, and I'll go through this list to make sure if there's issues, I'll email them to you. If there were things that were not, that we didn't take up tonight, well, just to make sure what other things that were addressed.
I just wanted to be clear with Mr. Smay's point. Are you talking about term limits for all positions or just the mayor?
That would be something that we could discuss. I was thinking probably just for the mayor, but again, I've done a little research on the subject just to see, what the pulse is in other towns, cities, etc. I mean, obviously it's a hot button issue nationally, when it comes to the Congress. You know, it's wildly popular. There's nothing in the actual Constitution that allows for it, but 84%, this is according to Gallup, 84% of people in Connecticut, just Connecticut alone, are in favor of term limits for their congressional people. So I'm wondering if that is something that at the local level is also, you know, interested. I'm not saying one way or another, but just that people would be interested to see, well, since we're changing the term of the mayor, you know, what would the options be if it's, you know, we're extending their term, you know, are they interested in having those be limited? You know, there's two different ways that it can be done. You could do it as you can have two terms, and then you wouldn't be able to succeed to a third term, but you could also run again after. You couldn't do, you know, you would just have two successive terms, and after that you would have to not run, not hold the office, but then you could also run again. Just a thought, because I know it is a hot button issue nationally.
Mark could attest to this, Oni, after going through one term, and I can certainly speak to this. It is very difficult every 2 years to get people to fill a slate and to want to volunteer their time and to do that on a 2-year basis. And then when we go to a 4-year, the commitment there, that I would be a little apprehensive to pass something that would include the Board of Aldermen and the tax board and at large, because the turnover there, and then to get people of qualified positions, certainly the mayor could be something that I would definitely entertain, but it's just going to be very hard pressed to find new willing and able people to come up and volunteer on, and especially if we want to expand this, you know, to the aldermen and to the tax board and stuff like that. We're looking at 13 on each side, or, you know, 9, or if you want to expand it, however, whatever the number is, just a large turnover there. The mayor, I'd like to hear from everybody else on the board. I'm okay with it's one person, but to have a term limit for aldermen and tax board, I just.
My opinion, we have
a. I mean, Oni.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind just saying limiting it to the mayor if you wanted to, whatever you want to do. I mean, if you don't want to do term limits, then so be it. If you wanted to limit it, I'm not sure, but that does raise a question. Is it legal to limit one and not everybody else? I don't know how that works on a state level, though. That would be something that we'd have to look into, I think.
Well, perhaps to give Mr. Smay's point the careful consideration, it might make sense to just pause for tonight and think about it, so everybody can give it the full thought, and whether you want it to just be one position or all positions or other, you know, so yes to some and no to others, you know, unless you're prepared to go through this list now, but it might make sense to kind of get the stuff in writing and try.
I agree. I think that's a good idea. If we can get these bulleted points narrowed down, Mark, and as well as Vin, if you can, Mr. Marino, if you can start the verbiage of the items that we passed tonight, so we can discuss them at our next meeting. Our next meeting, again, is not until July 28th. It's because there's an extra week in July. We're talking 3 weeks from today. So if you can get that information to us, maybe by this time next week, maybe that we could possibly meet and have time to review it. Maybe we can call a special meeting for the week of the 20th at some point, and then still have our regularly scheduled meeting on the 28th. So that'll give us a little extra time. Does that sound like it's doable, Mark and Vin?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think if we put it in bullet this way, we'll try to get that to you as soon as possible so you can think about the other outstanding issues that probably are not that controversial, but you could pass on it because I know it was raised and it's been a, you know, the issue of in the Board of Aldermen / Alderwomen. There was one suggestion to make it City Council, or if you have another creative way to kind of simplify the language and maintain the gender neutrality, I suppose anybody would be open to that.
Okay.
Thought we discussed last time we were going to change it to Board of Alders or think about that.
Yeah, I can't put my finger right on it, Ralph. So like, I think if we will bullet it just to kind of, basically like some cleanup items like that, which I would assume that those would be the types of things where people, you know, where you would be able to kind of just opine on it.
Right.
Pretty quickly.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so if we can have that ready, and then maybe we can, again, we can meet the week of the 20th and move on from there. I mean, rather than trying to dissect what those bulleted points are now, we're past the 2-hour mark as it is.
So what is there a day you want to meet while we have most everybody here?
Is there a specific day, the week of the 20th, that is better or worse for some?
It's just because of the way the days fall. It's the third Monday and Tuesday, but the fourth Wednesday and Thursday.
Right.
So it's a little confusing. So I don't know. If we could do it on Wednesday, would probably be the best day because Mondays could possibly be the tax board, Tuesday's planning and zoning, and Thursday would be the committees of the Board of Aldermen.
Okay. So can everyone commit to meeting Wednesday the 22nd?
Yes.
A special meeting? Okay. All right, we'll do that.
Is there any way we can do it at 6:30? I'm having difficulty with the 6 o'clock, if that's possible.
Sure. If everyone's okay with that, we can just start a half an hour later?
Yes. Okay. So I don't show up late again.
Yep.
It's all good.
All right. All right, then I think we're all set. We'll move to number 9. I need a motion to adjourn.
Before the motion, Mr. Chair, is Jerry still on the phone? Still with us? Is the chief still with us?
It looks like he is.
He's still on, yes.
Chief, I just, instead of having to track you down, I wanted to ask you now. My email address, can you write it down for me? So you can have it, please? Because I'm going to ask you for a particular piece of information. And it's, I can't hear the chief. Is the chief?
He's on, he's muted.
Oh. Pastor, I can forward your email address to him if you like and connect you guys in CC if you like.
Can do that right now.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to get the number of and the seniority of women in the Derby police force and the seniority and number of people of color in the Derby police force. As of today. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second.
By Mr. McCluster, second by, was that
Mr. Oney.
Mr. Malerba. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Have a good night. Thanks for your time, everyone.
9 p.m.